We're back here on the Green String Podcast.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot of things since the last time we talked. Probably meaning we just brought it back full circle like we've talked about all day.
Yes.
Of everything. But we've been having a kind of an interesting discussion, and it's got several different legs to it. And it's like the conversation between life and sport, and both of those conversations fall into like health and fitness, or the whole health and fitness world on Instagram, Facebook, social media, whatever it is. But they're not distinguished, and they're two totally different things. Like, to me, life is the conversation of like being able to, when you need to be able to be usable with your body, you need to be able to experience things, be of use to other people, yourself. The more freedom, the more exploration you have in your body, the more you can at least get this physical component of life. And just, I really like this thing I've been thinking about a lot of like the meaning of just being a service to other people. And I feel like being physically fit and being at your best capability physically is of maximum service to the rest of your tribe, to the world, or whoever it is, or your people. But then again, that's just talking about everyday like life, like you and I going through life, being good people, feeling our best, being able to do the things we love. And then when we start to sprinkle in the things we love, that's when that kind of like balance conversation we always have kind of comes in. Cause that's some of the things we love are like sport, hobbies, like the things that are a little bit harder. And it really does, like one thing supports health, and like one thing can support both, but they have two totally different outcomes if they are like your end all be all as your way of measuring health, performance, fitness, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the, all of this idea that you said of like being of service to people and how being able to do that requires some sort of physical health.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as helping somebody move some furniture or something more serious. I've been teaching some like safety classes recently.
Yeah.
And some of that gets to, this is for, you know, real estate agents and like how to be safe. And a lot of it's, you know, situational awareness, screening people and all that. But then there's a necessary part of it. Like in that worst case scenario, how do you protect yourself? Are you physically fit to do that or to protect somebody else? I mean, it goes that far as well. But like you said, on the sport side that we get so obsessed with too, where yeah. we engage in some sort of like sport endeavor, and then that becomes our like one single focus. Like yeah. everything is geared towards performance on that thing, which is,
man,
for most of us, just like really a small piece of it, but we make it the whole thing.
Uh-huh. And I think that's a really good way of a place that I've gotten stuck. And I know I've shared this with you a little bit, but like, I feel like everything, sport is kind of the main thing of social, like, let's just say social media, the algorithms of health and fitness, like what you see in that world is mainly geared towards things that excite people and inspire people and like get them motivated. And that's sport. That's the extreme. Like that is the events or the look or the exercise. And so I think where I started getting lost in this whole thing is that every day my conversations with people were internally probably geared towards improving their life and health and feeling better. But the avenue that was coming from, the platform that it was coming from, was always from sport. And so it became very hard because then I felt like I'm tearing down sport when, you know, that's where I came from. That's how I found this stuff. So it's like, I'm an extreme person myself. So I get that psychological side to things. And I love that. So I felt like I was like tearing down sport for a while to get people to understand health. But then I've had another shift in that where I realized that health and being of service physically for others is also the best way that you're going to be of service to be the best at sport for yourself. So really being healthy for life and being healthier performance for sport or whatever we want to say that, it's going to require us to like come back and improve every step, posture and position, what we do, like all these things, like they need improvement. Mm. No matter, you know, what the outcome, whether it be life or health, they're both kind of, and that's kind of what I'm confident now is like what I really think green strength is, you know, David Weck has done a really good job of talking about like every step stronger and trying to take that to the powerlifting world, to the CrossFit world, to the jiu-jitsu world, to the ballet world. Like, can I get this into every single niche of activity and just say that a better, more balanced step is on every step is going to contribute to whatever practice we're doing. Mm. And so that's kind of the perfect example of like where I found green strength and what I was trying to provide or what I was trying to find out was like, how do I blend these worlds? Because these worlds blended together are really the secret recipe for becoming the best version of yourself. And I'm not saying completely take away all these performance things. It's just like, what is the dosage that somebody needs? How much more reintegration of balance, stability, you know, better movement and pathways doesn't somebody need? And what if somebody has a lot of that? You know, then they're going to be able to endure so much more on the other side. But we need both sides. Both sides have to be utilized. And it's as simple as nobody being able to throw a baseball with their non-dominant arm and having these pathways. And like step one is like cleaning these things up. Like we need to make both sides of the coin, even our left hand to our right hand, pretty comparable in life for of service.
Yeah.
And then that gets back to doing so many things neurologically, doing so many things health-wise.
Making
left
the
brain,
whole,
right brain.
The whole body work.
The proprioception things. The things that we hear when we turn on 60 Minutes and we actually see somebody that like was a paraplegic and like started to do, you know, and you start seeing these things. It's like, holy shit. Oh, that's what those little moves. I always thought those were stupid.
Yeah.
Until you see like what they actually can do.
Yeah. We were going to talk about some rolling patterns today.
Yeah.
But first, you want to talk some jiu-jitsu?
Yeah. I mean, that's rolling patterns right there. Like, Your the ability to move in jiu-jitsu is the same way like the ability we need to be able to move in life. I think where we get stuck, the areas that we learn to like muscle through or find inadequate things that don't work as the levels go up are just these forms of, we just haven't figured it out in our own body yet. I haven't explored to figure out the angles, the movement that I'm capable of that I have to apply to solve this scenario. So it is kind of cool that jiu-jitsu gives us this, because I'm not being weird here. You and I get this every single time. We get literally second by second feedback and you're in a combative thing. So we're actually attentive. Like we're really thinking about this. And so we get so much like nonstop problem solving. Mm. That's just movement, brain, grip, leverage, position, like all these things. And I don't know, it is interesting. I don't want to be the one that turns it back to life because everybody does
yeah, everybody
that.
Everybody does that.
But it is really cool to understand like, no, like I do have a practice and I am doing something that is giving me constant opportunity to learn.
It's like better understand
right
your body, your movement, your right. balance, your all those things. Yeah, and like it's funny, like how many things have you learned that you're like, this doesn't work for me, I'm never gonna use this,
never gonna do that,
but then like, oh, here we are 3 years later and all of a sudden that thing that you're like, you know what, I always said I was never gonna do this, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden X Guard your thing.
X Guard, like I'm obsessed with the wrestling up from X Guard. I'm obsessed with that whole world of just like maybe you're sweeping somebody and they're coming back up, but you get inside position, we can get into single leg and start to go into a world of opportunity. But I remember Raphael and people teaching some things and you just at the time of learning, you're like, I'm not gonna learn this. Like I can't do that. I don't move that way very well. So like that's just something that won't be in my arsenal.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But then you get better.
all of a sudden.
And it's like, it has to be in my arsenal. Like, I have to figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
Or else we're not going. It's just the same thing. Continuous here.
Oh, man, it's crazy. And that, I mean, that's in everything, but it's so stark in that where you kick yourself because, like, you know, you flash back to the things that you thought you knew or that you knew would be universally true forever about you and the way you do things. And then something comes along that you're like, yep. As always, 3 years ago, I was a bigger idiot than I am today.
Oh my
God. 3 years from now, I'm going to realize today I'm a bigger idiot than I am 3 years from now.
My strong knee shield. Like, the knee shield was powerful for a while. And then I was like a strong guy and I didn't roll with, during this period too, like I didn't roll with as many upper belts. And I'm talking like upper belts, like world champion upper belts, you know? And the knee shield was strong. You like muscle manhandle people around. And now, like, fast forward to our school now. Dude, you better be really smart to throw that knee shield
you
up there.
You better be really good.
Everybody's smashing right through that sucker.
Right.
You know, I do it against Josh all the time.
Oh, that's not.
And he just does the textbook thing. And I laugh because I'm like, you're going to walk the center, step the foot, flatten me. Like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Perfect. You're doing it. Shit.
Oh, God.
This is terrible.
You miss Rafael. Like, the number of people I've seen that just like pull him into like butterfly guard or something. And you're like, or ride into half guard. And you're like, good luck, bro. Good luck.
That was the last thing I tried to do on him. That, like, that last time that we went kind of hard.
I don't understand that because, like, if you just give it time, he's gonna get you there. Like, he'll put you there.
So let's.
Why fast forward to?
Well, this was my reasoning. My reasoning was, I always usually play passive to try to last a little bit longer. But then that's not cool. So this time I was like, you know what? Screw it. I don't want to get thrown. I don't want to get taken down like this. Fair. So I am going to pull and I'm going into half guard and survival, I'm going to do what I do and I'm going to attack. And like immediately it was just like, that was professor, teacher, friend that like was like, I'll teach you a lesson. Man. I know exactly why you're pulling
you know
me.
You
I know
have
why
this.
You're pulling me into this. Yeah. I've taught this for decades. So let me just show you that I can combat that in a matter of 0.7 seconds and I'm on to something else. And then it's just like, it's terrible. But now what are you working on in your game?
Man, right now I've been working on putting my body back together. Mm-hmm. Had a couple injuries lately. Had the sprained AC joint that kept me out for a little bit of time. Had a little bit of a knee injury this week that we're working through. So I'm going to have probably, not training this week and we'll see how next week goes. I can probably get back next week. It's not real, real bad, but you know, just trying to do those things. And honestly, I think it's like what I'm realizing, and especially with this knee injury, I'm blaming myself for how this happened because it was with somebody who's maybe a little less experienced, who maybe tends to have a little bit more aggressive movements. I'm not calling anybody a spaz or anything, but like you're thinking these like, you know,
more. I know exactly what you're saying. This is a good person.
It's just, you know,
somebody trying to learn the game.
They're learning it.
Capable too.
Yep. And so I was playing kind of lazy.
You're being nice. And
passive or whatever. And realizing like there are times when you need to take control and impose upon somebody what you want to happen. Right, because I'm that person who's always like, oh, I want to be the most technical person. I want to flow. I want to, you know, make it look effortless and all those kinds of things. Right, that's what I want to be. Like, that's my epitome of what I want my jiu-jitsu to be like. But that doesn't always work. Right, there are plenty of times where like it is a physical aggressive activity, and you have to have that. It's time to go, and it's time to impose upon this person what I want to happen. Not just flow into it. And some of that's for a safety reason, right? Where it's like, I needed to maybe
you feel threatened. You need to be able to impose demands to control the situation.
Right, and express in that situation where it's like, okay, this is somebody who like, I need to make sure that I'm just like, I'm controlling the situation because I know that there could maybe be a little bit of a less controlled movement or something that potentially put me at risk. So again, nothing they did, this was completely on me. But that was sort of my, it reinforces some of this, like c- control, exerting control, because isn't that what jiu-jitsu is in the end? It's the ability to exert control over somebody else. It's not about the submissions. It's not about the takedowns or the sweeps or any of that. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's ultimately at the end of the day, it's about control. I'm able to control this poor person, put them in a situation that I want them in, and not letting them always just flow into that situation, but actually controlling the situation.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not to say that it's not professional to let them flow there, but the professional guides them there, right? You want them there, you control. Like, I get, it's like you're in a fight or flight moment. Martial arts has so many just back and forth moments of fight or flight, and you're bringing flight to the table. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, just there's could be some fight moments in here, and I'm not respecting it, and that's when I get injured. And
it's the yin and the yang. It's the blending the soft with the hard, and knowing when is the right time to do which. And any, and you know, in competition, we talked about this. Call you out. Right, Master Worlds, get out there. You start out great. You're in guard. You get this great kimura set up. You sweep the guy. You end up top, and then you kind of let it go.
Yeah, it's chill.
And you went to sort of soft mode as opposed to hard mode. And the control mode, this whole idea of like, I should be controlling the situation. I relinquish control. And then now next thing you know, I'm on the back end of the wrong side of the thing. And so there, that's always been difficult for me of like, no, I'm not. It's not that I'm just going to react to what they're doing and put myself in a more advantageous situation. It's I'm just not going to let them do what they want to do. You got to be able to do that.
100%.
Right. And that's, I feel like that's what I'm trying to work on now.
Yep.
Is taking those moments of like, no, I'm not letting you do what you want to do. I'm going to keep you pinned right where you're at and control the situation.
We do it all the time when we play, and it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about somebody we like to train with. That's a great person. And it's just a little bit on the level, a little bit below us, and we get to do things fun. And we both talked about how we just like to, you know, it's like, oh, like, you want that grip? Okay, have that grip. You want the spot? You want the lasso in? Go ahead and have it.
Yeah.
Like, it's that type of fun. And that's exactly, like, you train that way too much, and you're going to perform that way.
Yep.
And that was exactly me. I got to the point, I wasn't scared of him. I was like, I'm on top. And I kind of was having that same moment in my head. It's like, come on, push on me a little bit. Like, what do you want to do? Like, I'm about to smash the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And then really, it was like, no, I should have been on him from the second.
Yeah.
And I should have just, when I got on top, I should have been exerting pressure right in. And knowing those moments and then being able to know those moments with certain training partners and when to turn it on and when to turn it off. It's a hard thing. Ultimately, this has to be taught by other people. I mean, it's got to be self-learned
with
your training partners and stuff. But I think ultimately, there's got to be a very big value in trying to instill and teach people basically like what weightlifting did. Like, weightlifting used to use percentages, and then they started realizing that like there's some people that are made up with different mechanics inside, let's say, that have the ability to do a lot more reps with 90% of their one rep max, whereas somebody can do maybe two reps with 90% of their one rep max. There's just differences in things with people, okay? So it's like learn. So they came up with the RPE, rating of perceived exertion. How hard is that today? You know, is it a 10? Is it a 9? Like a 9, you have like, I got one rep left in the tank. An 8, I got a couple. And so that's also a scale that is on, it comes down to the person to put it on quality. I mean, you and I can go do the shittiest goblet squats in the world, and we can give our RPE on every single one, but we could still be getting ourselves in trouble. So I see that same thing in grappling, but having that rating of perceived exertion of teaching people, like, this is the level of resistance. This is you and I drilling and doing something and understanding like a true 30%, you know, it's like, that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
But what is the most beautiful thing that you see in jiu-jitsu? And it's with, there was an epic roll. Did you see PJ Barch? And who's the judo guy? His name is slipping my mind and I feel embarrassed. He's a stud judo guy Raphael's trained with him several times. Dude, I'm going to pull it up here because it's a...
Oh, Travis Stevens?
No.
Okay. I was like, stud judo. I was like...
Stud, cool judo. Travis will just kill you, right?
I was like, I don't know about roll.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. That dude, I don't want to... I'm not man enough to train with Travis Stevens.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to find it right here. Oh, Justin Flores.
Oh, J-Flow.
J-Flow.
Yeah, he's... Dude, love his style.
Just an absolute beautiful post. If you go to his thing, him and PJ Barch in there, that you can even read it, like where he's talking about, you know, it takes two people. And it like, we're going back and forth. He's letting me win. I'm giving him just enough, you know, to be a nuisance and stuff. But that we go with ease and we find the old Marcelo rolling with somebody. The point is, when you look at jiu-jitsu stuff, flow rolls and like nonstop just trade of technique is the coolest looking thing.
Yeah.
And it is the coolest form of like practicing jiu-jitsu with cardio.
Yeah.
But it is... That's what we have to teach.
Yeah.
Like we have to be able to get people to be able to do that, because there's got to be that next level in jiu-jitsu that you cannot reach unless you have the ability.
The ability to do all those. It's like the idea of, if I want to go ride my bike for 20 miles, how can I do that version of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
Right? The endurance jiu-jitsu,
yeah.
Not the 5 minutes hard, 6 minutes hard, yeah, 10 minutes hard. But like, how could I, if I had to go do...
Yeah.
30, 45, an hour of jiu-jitsu nonstop with somebody, how would I pace that?
Yeah.
Right? And that continued flow of back and forth of constant movement. Like I can't just stop. I got to have constant movement. That's the level that a lot of people haven't been able to figure out how to do that. But they should.
It's the art.
Like, and that's how you roll with somebody who's, you know, maybe a lot smaller than you, right? Like if I'm rolling with one of our teenage students, for example, like, I'm 95 pounds more than you, but I shouldn't roll that way. I'm not going to roll with them the same way I roll with you on, all right, it's time to go.
Yeah.
And some people struggle with that.
It's an interesting thing. It's like, I wonder what masters of the art, like I wonder what Shanji would say. Like, I wonder how much he would think that's important in the overall development of somebody. And then if we heard the Shanjis, the Homolos, and we started hearing, you need, like, this has to be a touch that you have to have to be a real practitioner. I wonder how many people would start to find that if they were inspired by that. But
speaking of big guys and smashing and not flow rolling, Big Man's got a big match coming up.
Big Man does. This is going to be the retirement match. And then, that's kind of the laughing stock. I ran into several people at Masters Worlds, and like people that will like ask about Raphael or like ask about our team. And I was like, what is he doing? And I was like, oh, he's doing his thing.
Man, he just
like, I thought he retired. Like he kind of did, but.
Yeah,
the door opens itself back up. He's ready to smash.
Yeah, he's probably not going to go to like Worlds.
Except ADCC next year.
I was like, we'll see about ADCC.
Except ADCC. No, I mean, he's got I'm not going to say anything. He's got a beautiful plan and vision all the way through that ADCC and next year. And so, I mean, he's going to do all that stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
It is crazy. He's got this match. It was going to be for the belt.
Yeah, with Pedro Mourinho. I hate to see that changed, because that was going to be a pretty sweet match.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, Ricardo Evangelista.
Hey, Ricardo, what did they face each other four times, he said?
I don't remember how many times. What was the last time, in like 2013?
It's usually always in the gi, isn't it?
Probably historically it has. I'm trying to remember, was that last one? Was it at No Gi Worlds in like 2013? I don't remember. I don't remember what it was now, but
it's
obviously
he's big. Yeah,
he's like 45 pounds bigger than
250, 255. I don't know.
Yeah, big dude. So
Raphael's incredible with mindset, stamina, pace, and stuff. I think he's going to be very fine on that match, and then that looks forward to. getting Pedro
on the next one.
So he could be 40 years old and get himself the 205-pound WNO strap would be pretty cool. And I don't know. I like him in that match against Pedro.
Both of them.
Yeah.
I like them for different ways.
Yeah. I think Pedro's a really cool, scrappy thing. But, man, look back at the El Monstro match just on that WNO in Oklahoma City. I mean, there were some moments in there where, like, the wrestling, like, El Monstro had some things that, like, worked and you were kind of, like, a little nervous. But then that just that tactician, the knowledge of Rafael to go deeper into the well to stuff that, you know, that sweep to the position to then take somebody of that strength, that cardio. I mean, dude, that dude's a bad, bad dude. And to make that guy literally throw up on the mat and throw up in a trash can. I mean, I saw that shit. I walked out. He was puking. And multiple other people saw it too. And I know that dude's not a chump.
No.
Like, to make somebody throw up 5 minutes after a match, you put the pace on him.
You put it on him.
And so, yeah, I'm excited for these. I think that's kind of what is in store for both those matches.
Yeah.
Almost.
Let's see. Gordon's headlining that one.
Gordon is.
Who's he? I don't remember.
Patrick Gaudio, is that his name?
Is that Gaudio?
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I don't know what to. I have so many.
Gordon by some.
Gordon is. Yeah, Gordon's going to dominate. This is going to be terrible in the sense of what he's going to do. I think he is going to show his DVD moves exactly like I would if I was him too. I'd say, look, this is what I put out, and I'd do it out here too.
Yeah.
It's too smart, and it's the most efficient thing. So yeah. It makes
sense. And if you can do it, if you can just go like pick whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's still crazy.
I mean, it's literally like running two businesses at one time.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, this is DVD sales, but this is also combat. So it's pretty badass, but it's also interesting how Gordon is so funny. I mean, I love to look at Gordon and it's just almost becoming more comical. And I don't know, I have only a couple of insiders. Like, I don't have all this journalistic stuff, but we always go back to the health thing. It's like the dude is always injured.
Yeah.
But he's in every post with Ways to Well. That's like changing the life of everybody else, including himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's surrounded by the best medical people and everything, but we still have these problems. And so, I don't know. That stuff always, I guess what I'm trying to say is what kind of gets at me is how people still buy into shit. Like, I wonder how people can see these posts and still like be so inspired to like, I have to get Ways to Wells. Like, I have to see, and there's probably so many good things. I'm not saying that at all.
Sure.
But it's like, man, and then you're like, oh, the four people in there are fucked up. Like, they're always injured, like, and they're always messed up. And
shouldn't there come a point where you don't need it anymore?
It is kind of a, like, yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. It's that kind of stuff.
But that's that, man.
It's the new and improved.
I don't want to throw shade at any chiropractors out there. It's not my thing, but it's that sort of thing of like, I feel like a lot of people, they just, oh, I got another appointment with the chiropractor, another one and another one. And I'm like, mm-hmm. At what point are you like healed? Because I don't hear too many people getting healed.
I know. And
anyway.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. I have this exact scenario with a friend of ours in the gym right now. And my natural instinct is to want to help and help and help and help. But then like, I have to value myself and I have to value like the knowledge that I do have. And I'd like to live a life where, yeah, we are in the gym. It's a lot less professional setting. I'm not putting doctors, you know, my certifications up on the wall and all this stuff. So I just want to have a conversation. So I get it, kind of takes some of that high dollar nostalgic down. But then it's like, man, you're spending the human thing that we have to get here is that you're spending money elsewhere. And like, if you invest that, the hard part is for me is to get you to understand this is like jiu-jitsu. Like, I have to teach you. This is going to be a long process. Like, if you want this, and you want to be better at jiu-jitsu, you want to hurt less in your body or whatever it is, it's like you have to realize that like the short-term things probably aren't really the answer, and you're investing in a long-term relationship for health versus I'm investing in a one-time massage.
Yeah.
I'm investing in a one-time crack up. And I get all those things. I want you to do massages. I want people to do a chiropractor if they're good and have validity or whatever. But in this case, I think this person probably went in the last month, I might be wrong, but like 3 to 5 times.
Yeah.
What starts to question me is that, how has the chiropractor never been like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, how, oh, I follow this workout program. Let me see that. Oh, well, then if they did and they were smart, then they go, damn, this is really good.
Right.
I've made sure, that's my claim to fame. I know, just like on the warm up, if you're a really knowledgeable coach and you see just the recommendations that at least I'm putting out there, I'm like, I put that out there every day.
Yeah.
They'd be like, very sound. Yeah. But then they would know right away, oh, there's a disconnect. This is great stuff, man. You're obviously just not doing this right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so that's like, that's, but your massage therapist and your chiro is probably not going to be like, we need to see how, what you're doing, because it's weird that you're coming in here.
Yeah.
More.
Too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
100%.
So let's bring this full circle, because we've been talking, you know, you're really starting to look at focusing on people like us.
Yeah. Well, 100%.
That are, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore. Been around the block a few times, like to do jujitsu. We train hard. We're happy to train hard. Mm-hmm. But we also want to do that for a long time. And one of the things you mentioned to me was one of these like foundational things that you're doing pretty much daily are some of these rolling patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Where we started talking about rolling in jujitsu, but you were talking about some of these rolling patterns. So I want to hear about that and how that's something you're implementing, what that is and how that's helping.
Well, it's very basic stuff. It's floor work. It's just, it's what we've seen from, you know, infant development to just being supine, rolling to prone, rolling into supine. And maybe are we doing those prone to supine to prone from upper body focused moving through our limbs? Or are we doing it through our
legs? I think it's funny. Like prone to supine. For those that don't know, it's back to your stomach.
Yeah, yeah. And you know I hate using words, too. I don't even know why I'm using that. up and down. You're just on the ground on your back. But, like, if I'm going to roll over to my stomach, like, I could initiate my – I could pick my right leg up, and I could take that across. And, like, this whole quadrant would start first if I wanted it to. Or I could do it with the arm. So there's so many things I can – it's exploration of moving on the floor, the groundwork, that level one. Where I've started to notice, again, I've done this for 15 years.
Forever.
But as the conditions that I've put myself in recently through my own injuries and watching other people like struggle with a lot of the same things that I was kind of going through, back pain, hip pain, any of these sort of things, you start to realize a common trend. As everybody can do these rolling patterns, everybody can do a butterfly sweep. But in order to get a butterfly sweep that is going to give you any sort of anything in return, you got to learn a lot of nuances, you know, and rolling is the same way. And the biggest nuance is the most simplest thing. It's if you and I are rolling around and moving, just kind of like we said, rolling from our back to and our arms are reaching and stuff. Do we reach through our ends? Because we had a 15, 20 minute conversation on feet today, mm-hmm. that were like, holy shit. So if I'm standing on the floor, this foot connection is the sole connection that is unlocking everything up chain. And when we're on the ground, there's so much more stability, obviously, from the floor, which is much more than our feet. But we have a tendency to not want to reach and actually elongate through the ends, mm-hmm. and start to let the most distal points be connected to the most proximal points, which is distal being the furthest away from the center and proximal being the center. So if we can expand communication from proximal to distal and distal to proximal, then we've won the game. Because take that when you were standing up today and you started really finding your foot, you started finding, you know, distal connection to the foot. And then when you really turned everything in, you're like, oh, dude, these two, these are together.
Right. Right, because it was connecting. Once I found the proper foot pressure where I'm supposed to be having
everything else connected in between those two points.
The knees got in proper position, the hips did, the glutes actually activated. Mm-hmm. And so we were doing this in the idea of like just a basic kind of a deadlift type pattern, a hinge.
Yeah, we were standing and hinging.
Standing and hinging without any weight, but feeling where, okay, if I'm putting my foot pressure in the wrong place, it's too much in my heels, I'm not actually getting those balls of the feet kind of dug in. Dug in's not the right word, but that pressure through the balls of the feet.
Pressure.
Activating. All of a sudden it's like, oh, there are my ass cheeks that I have so much trouble turning on. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's not in my lower back. It's actually in my hamstrings and my butt. And
yeah,
the knees are feeling like they're in the right spot and the hips. And okay, now I feel everything over something as simple as like where the pressure is in my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Something so that it was just like, I've been training with you for years and it's like,
okay, but
starting to finally unlock these things.
Where did I hear these things the first time? I heard them from yogis, body workers, you know, very holistic people. Now we are seeing this, what we've talked about and what we'll continue to always talk about is like how these worlds, because of social media, because the powerlifter Mark Bell, the ex-powerlifter, is benefits to sit down with the yoga person, that both they both have this great platform and they create a bigger platform.
Yeah.
Now the conversations are happening. Back in the day, in the weight room, if I ever in a powerlifting circle talked about what my holistic body worker said about, you know, this sort of stance or that metatarsal or this or that,
they'd laugh you out the
door. The analogy, if you see it all or Google it, you'll find a million comments and articles, jokes about it. It's that, well, that, where does that fucking person even squat, 135?
Right.
And
right.
It's like, well, no, maybe they squat 95, but they actually squat efficiently to where they're going to be able to do it when they're 60. And by the time you're 60, you're going to have double hip surgery and a new knee, and you're not even going to squat.
Yeah.
But you'll talk about how you squatted 600 pounds back in the day.
It's 40 like, years
this
ago.
This is the world we live in.
Yeah.
So we're at this distance of understanding what's optimal and correct and then what we can get away with. And then once we start to learn those things, then it actually comes down to like, what's good for me? And like, how do I get better connection? And I find the exercise then that's still going to serve me the best. I think we talked about, you know, it's like looking around the gym. And I've done this in this last couple of years. Like I've looked around the landscape of all this and everybody that was, especially in the powerlifting style world, strength conditioning. Everybody that has a brain, like halfway of a brain, halfway a good coach, none of them are still doing the same shit that they were preaching at 25. Hmm. They might still be preaching lift heavy weights, but they are using safety squat bars, different, you know what I mean? Like the frequency's different. Like they have all evolved. And this is such a short-lived thing. We've got to start looking at these evolutions and be like, okay, there wasn't, you know, five generations of powerlifters with a straight bar here. There hasn't been that many generations. Mm. You know, this didn't start this obsessive big three movements in this bilateral plane like in the 20s. You know, like we've been doing this for a short amount of time and we can start to see what happens. We see grapplers who don't take care of themselves. You see badass martial artists get around 50 and they get, their joints don't work and stuff. Now, the byproduct is their skills are highly deadly. So although their body might not function the way anatomy and the way that a happy life and longevity need, their body still possesses skill sets that will fucking kill you.
Yeah.
And so then people don't examine it the same.
Yeah.
You know, you look at him as like, oh, well, he's still a martial artist. He moves great. It's like he's formed into this one extreme.
Yep.
Combat the fight. He needs the flight.
People forget the pieces where like I saw Bernardo Faria a couple years ago had to have like shoulder surgery and he had a picture of all the stuff they pulled out of his elbow.
Oh my God.
And how much pain he was in. Jeff Glover, who is like,
that was insane.
One of the most like crazy movers in jiu-jitsu ever. Like the guy has been moving like just insane for years and still does even to this day, but like had to have pretty major back surgery, back or neck surgery, right?
Yeah.
And so we see a lot of, I think Homolo recently had to have surgery for mm-hmm. some back issues. And so it's like, okay, like, yes, they bring all this, but like, then how can the rest of us say, okay, well, how can we do this in a way that prevents us from having to go down that route? Same thing with exercise, right? Okay, yes, we've seen these guys that lift astonishing amounts of weight, but then fast forward 20 years and it's like, was it worth it at that point? Because mm-hmm. now we're having to have the hip surgery, the back problems, the whatever it is.
Yeah.
So one of those things is the rolling patterns, right? We kind of went a little off the trail there, but I love this because it's something you can do just at home.
Dude, it's the movement before the movement. Like, I don't even, I mean, of course I can get warmed up with a movement prep, but like when we think about warming up and exercise, we think about those like movement preps. Like we're going to do high knees. We're going to do this. We're going to do this world's greatest stretch and this, you know, hip circles and all these dynamic movements that have been around and we know, and they all work and they're all valid, but it's like, there's something about, I need to organically move and get the body connected. I need to get the spine mobile. I need to, you know, really get my hips and my shoulders disassociated to where I'm moving them segmentally better. I need to wake up my hands and my feet and the connection between those, because that's the areas, you know, like we said, proximal to my feet, distal. And it's not the, I can squeeze the foot and I can squeeze the abs. The connection is the midline, and I've got to move and create that. And then when we do that, all of a sudden you roll around for 2 minutes in some of those things that we do, and then you go to a hip circle. It feels exponentially better.
Yeah.
You feel way more connection. You actually have like contralateral stability. Like everything is ready to start actually putting demands in training. Because like the warm up is just like, let's put the body in these segmental things and kind of warm bits and pieces up and make it function better and warm the core temperature.
Make the other shoulder.
Yeah, and do that kind of stuff. So it's like, man, we have got to be able to get back to play. And that's what this is. Recoding has become a very hot word in fitness. Like we need to recode our movement. Godet uses that. Like they sell it on like, we need to put them through recode. It's been recoding. To me, the recode is a BS. It's putting you back into a system. The natural recode is humans playing and being humans.
Mm.
You know, like if we just get back on the floor and move around and start being playful humans, then we're going to recode ourselves naturally. If the hardcore things in our life are making it very, very hard to play, then you know without talking to you or I that your balance is messed up. If it is hard to play and get down and move around and play with your kid, your hips hurt, your back might be a little stiff, you've got to take a self-examination because your balance is messed up somewhere. Because if we make those changes to the balance somewhere, small changes, we eventually need to get you to a point of where you're able to do those basic little playful things, like get down on the ground and play with your daughter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do that without some sort of pain, you can't justify any exercise you're doing that's on the hard end. Like it's just, you know, we want you to do as much as you can, but you can't justify it.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's the world we're living in. That's this argument that we're in every day. It's like, we're not taking this away. We're just trying to be responsible. And they kind of close this thing up. I thought it was funny. I told you that story of Josie and I were talking last night and she wanted to sit down and like, she wants to talk about programming. And I wanted to try to show her how basic and stupid and easy it is that once we start to realize like it's push, you know, hinge, push, pull, squat, like we have these basic movements. And then it's kind of like, well, like we've said 1,000 times, even if we have a high level athlete, we're probably going to just make sure that we're going to restore those movements and pattern them back up to the highest level that we can get them. If we have a person who's not moving, an everyday person, my mother or something that I want to try to inspire to get healthy, well, we have to ingrain those healthy movements.
Yeah.
Got to be able to bend over and get up and down and do these things. Athletes too. And we're seeing that athletes can benefit from that because a lot of guys from a career of hard are ending up hurt and they're ending up not able to do these things. But when Josie and I were talking about programming, we talked about, and this is, I don't know how we fix this. I don't know how, I guess we talk about it. And because this is me, like I told her, like on my notes, on my phone, I have started a million threads of redoing a different phase for myself, building all these programs to help get out of my back stuff, like, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, it just becomes obsessive. You look at the program and it's got everything. And I don't even know. And I literally spend time sitting there thinking about how I'm going to move things around to make things fit. And then if somebody, if my exact twin came to me and sat down in this scenario and I wrote out notes for a consultation, it would be exactly opposite. Like it would be so much opposite.
Founded.
And I believe in everything on the other side. I know it's the right way, but myself won't do it unless I, you know, put a third party in there, get another coach, which I do. I have other coaches tell me, dude, you're being a fucking idiot. You know? And I'm like, I know. Like I thought maybe you'd say good.
Yeah.
But I knew you wouldn't say good. This is, it's not right.
It's too much.
So I don't know. It's the more we play, the more we can intuitively learn ourselves in general, the more we can recode ourselves, the more we start to consciously observe. And this is great for BJJ practitioners because to be able to do this for the long haul, we're going to have times when physical practice takes a little bit more of the front seat in jiu-jitsu. You're a perfect example of this. Yeah. You can speak on this. You have to be like, if you're the guy that's going to try to force feed the jiu-jitsu when times of play and recoding are feeling challenging, it's not going to last.
Absolutely.
It might last for a year or two, but it's not going to last in the long term. And I think that's the easiest way. You know, we need to all get to a place where we feel pretty damn good. I mean, we can have some aches and pains here and there, but we need to feel and move pretty good. And that is our direct, you know, reference of how is my balance. Mm-hmm. Because if this is suffering, this stuff is out of whack for sure.
I love it. So I want to do a challenge for all of our jiu-jitsu practitioners.
Yeah.
Of to do the next time they get on the mat, it's a perfect opportunity to do it before class starts, get there just like 5 minutes early and do some roll, like some, a rolling pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So walk us through for somebody who's not familiar, how would you describe just a basic rolling pattern that they would do before jiu-jitsu class just to try to turn that on?
So simply lay on your back on the floor, reach your arms above your head, legs are out long, and just gently take one arm and start to reach across and follow that hand and start to feel how you can segmentally roll one little inch at a time all the way down through your legs and try to just roll that arm all the way over, and then you're on your stomach. And then you can repeat that same process. You can reel up that same hand and follow it and follow it and follow it. And eventually the body's just going to keep following
you. Just one little segment at a time.
One little segment at a time. But it's not going to start that way. It's going to feel clunky. It's going to feel weird. You're going to roll back and forth. You're going to roll over. This opposite shoulder feels like it's getting caught up in there. And that is just because you have not relaxed and played. Because if we spend 2 or 3 minutes and I get you to calm down and start to really reach and allow that side bend to happen, what happens? We see them, oh, that feels great. It's like, you just got to calm down. You just got to play and realize that there's no real skill to this. It's just exploration. Yeah. And you have to give your all in that exploration for you to get out what you're going to get, you know, what you need. Or you're going to keep doing the same thing. You're going to just get down there and your role is going to be the same.
Perfect.
So get on your back, roll over onto your stomach, roll back to your back, do it from your legs, do it from taking your knees over, do it from your hands, explore. Just feel how many different ways you can do that. And then all of a sudden, like you said, you're probably gonna have a much greater connection to your hips, your lower back's gonna feel a lot looser. You're definitely gonna feel like you're in a better position to start training immediately and getting stack passed or start doing forward rolls and shrimping. And all that stuff, which we do in jiu-jitsu.
There you go. So get there just a few minutes early, get on the mat, get extended, reach up, legs
out. Good morning stretch.
Pick up one from the other side. Get that roll. It's not a, you know, just relax, roll.
We do it naturally anyways. So
we do. When we get out of bed, right? You think about that. You stretch up and you bend. Well, we're just taking this from one side to the other, back and forth. So give that a test. See what you think. And let us know what you think, which you can do that by going to your website.
Yes.
What is your website?
So it is green-strength.com. I've got the Green Strength HQ website still. That's for basically like the gym, and it's got all of our stuff. We're going to be moving everything over to the green-strength.com. And so you can find everything there, or you can find me online.
Now, can they sign up for your email list there?
Yes.
So I want you to do this because you give everybody something for free when they sign up.
Uh-huh.
It is the Back to Human.
Yes. This is a little Back to Human Plus Strength program. I call it the Back to Human Plus Strength program. And it's just it's a simple, basic body weight program that you can do anywhere. And it's really a very good thing that it has a lot of these crawls and rolls in it. I've incorporated a ton of this stuff in there. So it's a really good program. It's 4 weeks and you can jump in if you're, you know, beat up and you're looking to kind of re-engineer your physical path. Just give this a couple of weeks and let's start putting something together.
There you go. So go to green-strength.com. Mm-hmm. Give him your email and you will get that right off the bat. He'll send you that Back to Human Plus Strength program.
Yeah.
And we're going to be back here on the Green Strength podcast, getting back into the role of this. Probably a couple times a month.
Yeah.
And really, I think speaking to the people who care about their physical fitness, but also who train jujitsu and are grownups and want to continue to be grownups, feel good, do jujitsu, be strong, be healthy. Those are the people we're going to be talking to and really blending those two worlds together. So if that's up your alley, then make sure you're subscribed. Come back, check us out next time so that you can be here with us on the Green Strength podcast.
Yes, sir.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
Telling me like